Welcome to this deep dive. Today, we're tackling a really pivotal case in securities law. In Re Vivendi, S.A. Securities Litigation, it's a 2016 Second Circuit decision.
That's right. And we've got some great source material lined up insights specifically for law students. Detailed case briefs, the works.
Yeah, our mission today is pretty clear. Unpack the key rulings and figure out why this Vivendi case is still so important, especially for all of you heading into legal practice.
Definitely. What makes Vivendi so interesting, I think, is how it ties together several, you know, really fundamental securities law theories.
Like what?
Well, we're going to talk about the materialization of risk idea, price maintenance liability, and how the PSLRA, the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act, actually played out.
Okay.
It really sheds light on, you know, what companies can and can't say to their investors, sort of the boundaries.
Got it. So maybe let's start with the backstory, get everyone oriented. Vivendi, originally a French utilities company, right?
Yeah, started out in utilities. But then, early 2000s, they went on this huge spending spree, massive transformation. They wanted to be a media giant.
Right, buying up places like Universal Studios, Canal Plus, and big name.
Huge acquisitions. But behind the scenes, this aggressive expansion, it was creating problems.
Really big problems.
Financial problems. Exactly. Internally, they were facing a serious liquidity crunch, like genuine worries about covering their short-term debts.
Okay, so internal panic, but what were they telling the public?
Yeah, that's the core of the case. Publicly. Totally different story. They kept reassuring investors, talking about their financial strength, using phrases like a strong balance sheet.
A pretty stark contrast then, internal reality versus public statement.
You got it. And, well, eventually the truth started leaking out, the stock price tanked, and that's when the shareholders got involved.
Predictably. So the class action lawsuit, filed under Section 10B and Rule 10B-5, the usual suspects for securities fraud.
Yep, the bedrock provisions. The claim was basically that Vivendi lied, or at least made seriously misleading statements about its financial health.
And that those lies either pumped up the stock price or kept it from falling when it should have.
Exactly. Artificially high price, classic securities fraud allegation. Investors lost money when the reality hit.
So the case goes to court, Southern District of New York, and the jury.
The jury initially sided with the plaintiffs, found Vivendi liable.
But knowing how these things go, that wasn't the end of the road.
No, not at all. Appeals followed. Both sides appealed, actually, to the Second Circuit.
And what did the Second Circuit decide?
Well, they upheld the liability finding. So Vivendi was found liable for securities fraud. That stuck.
Okay, a win for the plaintiffs there.
But, and this is a big but, they significantly changed who could be part of the lawsuit. They brought in the Morrison decision from the Supreme Court.
Ah, Morrison v. National Australia Bank. That's the case about U.S. securities laws applying overseas, right? Extraterritoriality.
Precisely. Morrison basically says U.S. securities laws primarily cover transactions within the U.S. or on U.S. exchanges. So the Second Circuit applied that here and kicked out the foreign shareholders.
Ouch. So if you bought Vivendi shares on, say, the Paris exchange, you were out of luck in this U.S. lawsuit.
That's the gist of it. Liability confirmed, but the class of eligible plaintiffs got smaller.
Okay, let's dig into the specific legal fights. The plaintiffs pointed to 57 specific statements, right? Not just general claims.
Yeah, 57 distinct instances where they said Vivendi made false or misleading statements about its liquidity. And importantly, these were misstatements, things Vivendi actually said, not omissions, not just silence.
That's a key difference, isn't it? The duty to speak versus lying when you do speak.
Absolutely. Generally, there's no like universal duty to spill all your secrets. Mm-hmm. But Vivendi wasn't about silence. It was about them actively putting out statements that allegedly didn't match their internal situation.
Like saying the roof is fine when you know it leaks.
Exactly. Not just failing to mention the leak, but actively misrepresenting the roof's condition.
And Vivendi tried to argue some of these were okay because they were forward-looking statements protected by the PSLRA safe harbor.
They did. That's a common defense strategy. The PSLRA safe harbor protects a company's predictions about the future if they're labeled as such and have meaningful warnings, you know, cautionary language.
But it didn't work here. Why not?
The Second Circuit basically said, nice try. They found that many of these statements, like we have strong liquidity, weren't really predictions about the future.
They were about the present.
Right. They were factual claims about Vivendi's current financial state. And the court found they weren't accompanied by the kind of robust cautionary language needed, and they misrepresented the present reality. So no safe harbor protection for those.
Okay, that makes sense. You can't hide present lies behind the safe harbor meant for future guesses. Now, loss causation, proving the lie actually caused the loss, that can be tricky. How did the plaintiffs tackle that?
They used the materialization of risk theory. And the Second Circuit really validated it here.
Materialization of risk. What does that mean, practically?
Okay, so traditionally, you often needed a corrective disclosure. Like, the company admits, oops, we lied, and the stock drops immediately. That's clean causation.
Right, the aha moment.
Yeah. But materialization of risk says you don't always need that explicit confession. Loss causation can happen when the risk the company was hiding or downplaying actually starts to, well, materialize, comes true.
So in Vivendi's case?
The hidden liquidity risk started showing up in the real world. Think credit rating downgrades, forced asset sales to raise cash, things like that.
Ah, so the consequences of the hidden risk started hitting the market.
Exactly. And the court said, look, when those previously hidden risks surface and the market reacts negatively, the stock price drops, that can be enough to show loss causation. Even if Vivendi never explicitly said we misled you about liquidity.
That's huge. It means plaintiffs don't always need the company to confess. The market figuring out the hidden truth can be enough.
It really broadens the path to proving causation. And for you, as future lawyers, that's a critical takeaway. The market reaction to the revealed risk itself can link the lie to the loss.
And there was expert testimony involved, someone named Dr. Nye.
Yes, Dr. Nye. His economic analysis was pretty central. He basically showed the court, using economic models, how Vivendi's misstatements likely inflated the stock price.
So quantifying the impact of the lies.
Pretty much. Yeah. Showing that the stock was trading higher than it should have been, given the real financial picture. This supported both the idea that the price was inflated and this concept of price maintenance.
Price maintenance. We'll get back to that. Did Vivendi challenge his testimony?
Oh, yeah. They challenged his methods. Mm. But the Second Circuit ultimately said the trial court was within its rights to admit Dr. Nye's testimony. They didn't find an abuse of discretion. His work was key in connecting the dots between the lies, the inflated price, and the eventual losses.
Okay, so we've got the facts, the procedure, the key issues like misstatements and loss causation. Let's talk about the Second Circuit's reasoning. What was the fundamental logic behind their decision?
Well, a core principle was this idea. If a company chooses to talk about its finances, it has to tell the whole truth. Or at least not paint a misleading picture with half-truths.
No selective disclosure.
Right. You can't just highlight the good stuff and conveniently omit the bad stuff that changes the whole meaning.
Which ties into that contextual materiality idea you mentioned.
Exactly. A statement like strong liquidity might sound fine on its own. But in the context of Vivendi's hidden severe liquidity problems, suddenly it becomes materially misleading.
The context makes it deceptive.
Precisely. It's like saying your car is great, but failing to mention the engine is about to seize. The omission of the engine problem makes the great car statement misleading. Context is everything.
Okay, now back to price maintenance liability. The court really leaned into this.
It did. They explicitly endorsed the idea that securities fraud isn't just about lying to initially inflate a stock price.
It's also about
actively using misrepresentations to keep the price from falling, propping it up artificially, preventing the market from realizing the true lower value. The Second Circuit said that's just as illegal.
So lying to stop a collapse is as bad as lying to cause a pump up.
That's the essence of it. Both actions deceive investors about the stock's true value.
This is all incredibly relevant for law students. Let's distill some key takeaways. What should they really lock onto from Vivendi?
Okay, first, specificity under the PSLRA is crucial. Remember those 57 specific statements? That wasn't an accident.
Right. Plaintiffs need details, not just they lied.
Exactly. Vague fraud claims get dismissed. You need to point to what was said, when, and why it was false or misleading. You need the receipts, like you said earlier.
Okay, takeaway one, be specific. What else?
Second, understand the flexibility of loss causation via materialization of risk. You don't always need the smoking gun confession.
The link between the hidden risk surfacing and the market drop can be enough.
Right. You need evidence, of course, like expert testimony linking the events, but it opens up strategic options for plaintiffs.
Good for future litigators to know. Third point.
Third, the duty when speaking. Companies can't use half-truths or selective disclosure. Once you open your mouth about finances, you need to give an accurate picture, considering all the relevant context.
No hiding behind partial truths?
Nope. Fourth, remember the Morrison limits. U.S. securities law isn't global. Jurisdiction matters, especially with foreign companies or shares bought overseas.
Got it. Crucial in today's markets. Any others?
Yeah, just reinforcing the distinction between misstatements and omissions. Vivendi was about active lying, affirmative misstatements. Different analysis than if they just stayed silent, though silence can sometimes be misleading too, depending on context and prior statements.
Okay.
And finally, that price maintenance point. Fraud isn't just inflation. Actively propping up a price with lies is also actionable. It acknowledges the harm done by prolonging the deception.
So it seems Vivendi really refined our understanding on several fronts. Disclosure duties, causation, the scope of fraud itself.
Definitely. It's a case that touches on so many practical aspects of securities, litigation, and corporate compliance.
Yeah.
A must read, really.
Absolutely. So wrapping up our deep dive, Vivendi is clearly a landmark case. It gives us vital lessons on corporate disclosure, how fraud liability works, and the nuances of proving that critical link loss causation.
It really does. And it leaves us with some interesting thoughts, especially with how fast information moves today. Thinking about that materialization of risk theory.
Yeah.
How does that play out now? With complex global markets, social media, mm-hmm. when does a potential risk become so probable, so impactful, that a company has to disclose it before it fully materializes to avoid misleading investors? What's the duty to manage and disclose risks proactively?
That's a really challenging question. Where's the line between prudent risk management disclosure and just creating unnecessary panic?
Exactly. It's a constant balancing act, and cases like Vivendi help define the legal boundaries. But the practical application keeps evolving.
A fantastic point to ponder. For everyone listening, we really encourage you to dig deeper into the Vivendi decision itself and keep exploring these complex securities law principles. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.